Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 49 of season 10 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Dave Anderson of the Free Kittens Movie Guide. Welcome back once again, Dave.
It's good to be back for minute 49.
Yes.
Feels like we only got 26 minutes to go.
Well, there's a little more than that, but...
Not for everybody.
That's right. That's what I was going to say. In the movie, we have more than 26 minutes. The part of the plot only gives us 26 minutes. But we'll get there. We'll get there. So, minute 49 begins with Garber coming up with a brilliant idea and ends with Blue deciding to brief the hostages. So we ended things yesterday with Garber needing to relay to Blue that they have decided they will be taking the they will be paying the ransom. And Blue gives him instructions on what he needs to do, and then Blue tells him, "Well, contact me when the money gets here." And then we had Frank start cursing, and you know, at this point when this minute begins, so Garber ignores Frank's ranting, and he presses the button to talk into the microphone and goes, "Hey Pelham, it might interest you to know I figured out how you're going to do it." And you know, you see a very intriguing expression on Shaw's face, on Mr. Blue's face here, you know, because he picks up the radio once again, and he's very curious to know what the hell this guy is talking about. And like, let's see what you think. And he responds and goes, "Yes, it would interest me very much." And then Garber goes, "You're going to make every man, woman, and child in New York City close their eyes and count to 100, right?" Mr. Blue isn't as amused at this line. And he goes, "It is now 2:47. That means you've got 26 minutes. And he goes, "Hey, wait a minute, pal. Wait a minute. We agreed to pay the money. Now turn your clock off, will ya?" It was 26 minutes. "Look, pal, your instructions were complicated. The money has to be counted, backed, tied, transported uptown. Just isn't physically possible." Be surprised what's physically possible. The clock's running. And at this point, this is the first time where we see Garber get a little bit upset about the thing, and he smacks the table. 26 minutes. After that, we can start scratching off one per minute. So again, it's a nice conversation between the two of them. I like the way that Garber tries to put in a little bit of humor into this situation in order to try and maybe catch Blue off guard with something that he'll tip his hat, pun intended, slightly, even though Garber doesn't know he has a hat.
Yeah, I think Garber does kind of catch Blue a little bit off guard with that statement. "I know how you're going to do it." Maybe I'm looking into it too much, but I could just detect just a little bit of uncertainty in Mr. Blue's face that maybe his so-called foolproof plan might have a flaw. It immediately goes away when, like you said, Garber's trying to make a joke about it, but just a little bit of kink in the armor on Blue's part on that side. That's what I saw anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And it makes sense because that's what Garber's looking for. You know, he wants to find something that he's seeking some sort of clue. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get it is by talking to him. You know, the two of them are as you mentioned, I think yesterday, they're not going to be face to face till the end of this movie. So it means that the interactions between them can only be verbal. We get to see them, but they don't. Which I like.
Yeah.
I like the way they do this for the very fact that you know, they find a way to have a conversation between these characters without them having to meet. Mm-hmm. Which plays out really well and helps make things even more believable as it's all moving along.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I remember when I first saw this, and after that exchange, when Mr. Blue says they have 26 minutes left, That threw me for a loop. I don't know if it was because of other heist slash hostage movies that I saw or whatever, but the fact that he doesn't reset the clock really ramps up the tension. And you know, when you think about $1 million, I mean, how many people would have to be counting that to come, you know, to count up $1 million and ship it halfway across Manhattan in 26 minutes?
Correct.
It just seems like it just seems impossible.
Right. It seems as if it's one of the, you know, there are movies and books and stories, you know, that we're all familiar with, where the deadline is an impossible deadline, and it's built that way. But Blue doesn't seem like the type of guy who would make an impossible deadline, because and ultimately he wants the money. He's not in. He doesn't want to kill all the hostages. So
Almost like he played out this scenario.
but again,
And, you know.
him being adamant that we haven't reset the clock and we're still going on 26 minutes says something about him. It says that, you know, maybe he does want bloodshed, because it truly is impossible. Even though, you know, we'll find out later in the movie, they come close, but not nearly as close as as that would have helped.
Or he's just simply reestablishing his dominance and letting, you know, Garber know that he's ultimately still in charge of this whole scenario. And
He's ultimately in charge, but he's not willing to budge at all. And again, this is a big ask, and to expect that with this type of ask, everything is going to go as planned, you know, where I'm not going to have to kill somebody. I don't know. Again, it makes it seem as if Blue knows that he's going to have to show him that he means business, even though he's given them a deadline that's impossible to reach. Yeah, I don't know. You know, it makes me wonder why he would do something like that. So basically, the ploy that Garber describes here is the game of hide and seek, which is also known as hide and go seek. You have either hide and seek or hide and go seek.
Haven't heard that
It's
term before.
you have or have not.
Have not.
Okay.
I don't get out much.
Well, I'm assuming that you, like me, probably don't play hide and seek anymore.
No, not since my girls grew up.
Exactly. That's the thing. You know, when you have younger kids, you'll play with them. When you are a younger kid, you'll play it. But generally, as an adult, you don't play them. Generally. So the idea of the game is a simple game that has at least two, usually at least three, different players, where one of them is considered it, and the others have to then they have to that one has to count to a particular number, whatever is decided in the game, with their eyes closed, and then they have to go find where the other players are hiding, you know. And when they reach they count out loud, and when they reach that number, they say, "Red or not, here I come." And then you know, they try to find the kids, or the people that are, I mean, I guess adults could play it also, the people that are hiding. There's usually a place that you can be safe, right? Like a home base or something like that, and you can't be tagged with that. I mean, it's a game that's been around for a really long time, that probably goes back all the way to the second century. And there, between 2010 and 2017, there was a hide and seek world championship. They had an international hide and seek competition. They held it for the first time in Italy, and it actually was a joke the first year they did it. It started as a joke, and then they eventually, you know, turned into something more. They in 2016 and 17 they did it in a ghost town in Italy called Consano, which is also known as the Italian Las Vegas, which is weird, because why would you call a ghost town the Italian Las Vegas? They apparently played with teams when they did that. There was an attempt to try and get hide and seek into the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo.
Jesus. This sounds like something that they would show on. I don't know if you're familiar with ESPN, but every now and then they'll do ESPN 8, The Ocho, which is, an allusion to the movie Dodgeball. And they would show all these obscure, weird sports like lawnmower racing and, pillow fights, competitive pillow fighting. And this sounds like something that would be on The Ocho someday. I'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, it's a little strange that they would want it to be a an Olympic game. That's the thing that throws me the most on that one.
Well, the Olympics historically used to have other competitions that were not athletic based. Long time ago, there were competitions in music and art. They didn't last very long, but I did read where those were, believe it or not, Olympic events.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were some very interesting ones. They had a live pigeon shooting in the 1900 Paris Games, which was obviously banned afterwards because it was a little too gruesome.
Yeah.
They had a tug of war between 1900 and 1920. They had a game called or a competition called Plunge for Distance. Where it was in 1904, where athletes remained motionless after a dive, measuring how far their body traveled before sinking.
That sounds riveting.
Yes.
Well, I found something here that in the early years, there were Olympic medals awarded for art that, was inspired by sports. So there was medals in architecture and music and painting and sculpture. So,
Interesting.
yeah.
In addition, they used to have rope climbing between 1896 and 1932. They had croquette in the 1900 Paris Games. They had motor boating in the 1908 London Games. They had underwater swimming in the 1900 Paris Olympics, measuring distance underwater. They had a game called Rogue, which was a unique American sport resembling croquet, which only appeared in the 1904 Olympics. Oh, they had a game called Single Stick in the 1904 Olympics, which was a form of broadsword fighting with a blunt club. That also sounds really interesting.
I'd watch that.
They had in the Winter Olympics, an event called Military Patrol, which is the original form of the biathlon, which combines skiing and rifle shooting. They had skijoring, oh my God, which is athletes on skis were pulled by horses, dogs, or snowmobiles across frozen terrain. That also sounds pretty strange. They had a 3,000 meter steeplechase. Else do they have? They've had some crazy events over the years. They had pistol dueling in the 1912 Olympics, and it says it
Pistol
wasn't a
dueling.
It wasn't quite as exciting as it sounds, as participants weren't actually firing at each other, which would certainly have added an element of jeopardy to proceedings. Instead, the brave men taking part had to fire at mannequins dressed in frock coats with targets painted on their chests. And
You
then
know, that actually sounds kind of cool.
this article goes, "What a waste of a nice frock coat." They had a swimming obstacle race where swimmers had to climb up a pole, clamber over a row of boats, and swim under another row of boats in a sort of Olympic version of total wipeout. In this instance, the champion was Australian Fred Lane. The event took place in the Seine, which will which also hosted the 2024 triathlon. Interesting. Okay, here it has a list of it has the art, as you mentioned. So this article goes, javelin, hammer, discus, watercolors. From Stockholm 1912 to London 1948, medals were awarded for sport-inspired artworks from architecture, literature, music, painting, and sculpture. Including art was the idea of Pierre de Coubertin, founder of the modern Olympics, who wanted to see people trained in body and mind. The only reason juried competitions were dropped in 1954 was because artists were deemed to be professional, so the inclusion of art was seen to run contrary to the spirit of the games.
Well, times have changed, haven't they?
Yes, and the most obscure one that they had was the event of poodle clipping in Paris,
Isn't exactly what
1900.
it sounds like.
Yes, it is.
Poodle clipping.
It involved 128 competitors performing in front of a crowd of 6,000, where they had to clip the fur off as many poodles as they could in 2 hours. So many questions come to
But where do
mind.
I get?
How could they ensure the poodles were the same size? Were they all equally docile? And more importantly, why in God's name were they doing this? Not that winner Avril Lavigne minded after winning gold with a total of 17 clipped poodles.
All those poodles in one place.
Yes, apparently. That really does take the gold here. For being the most obscure, no question about
For
that.
sure. I'd still pay to see it. Not a
Maybe
lot, but I'd pay to see
they
it.
videoed it. Maybe there's someone used a camera in 1900 to watch it. I don't know. All right, and then the shot changes, and we're back on the train, and we hear some like noise in the background when the hostages cough. The drunk woman actually drops her bag, which a bottle falls out of, and then Mr. Blue stands up and says, "Your attention, please, ladies and gentlemen. It might interest you to know," and then he gets cut off. But before he gets cut off, he actually takes his foot and pushes the bottle under the seat, to keep it farther away. So you know about the whole idea of the open container law, right?
Yeah.
So watching this scene got me thinking of that. What's the idea of how does it work? So in the US, the open container laws are state laws. They're not federal, and therefore each state is very different. So, how many states do you think have some sort of prohibition possessing or consuming an open container of alcohol in public areas?
Okay, I'm gonna get. I know my state does, but I think my state does. I'm gonna say about two-thirds of them. Also, if you want a number, maybe 36.
You're saying 36 states have some sort of
Open container
prohibition.
regulation, yeah.
Okay. The answer is actually 26. 26, so
Oh.
it's slightly more than half. Part of the problem is the idea of what's a public place is never really clear. And California is one of the unique states that it has a state law that prohibits possessing alcoholic beverage containers that have been opened in public places owned by city, county, or city and county, or any recreation and park districts, regional park, or open space district. But similar to states that have no law, the state law only applies to some or all the aforementioned areas in which the city, county, or city and county have enacted an ordinance, meaning that the state says that it's a law, but only if the city or county also have it as a law, it's not. So pretty interesting. What do you think the definition of open means?
I'm assuming that open means it's it's been open and partially consumed.
Okay, so that's in some states. In other states, just having the seal broken is enough to violate the prohibition. Obviously,
Okay.
if you have the cap off, or in some ways you find a way that the alcohol can be otherwise readily accessible. And there are actually places where the law says that they specifically have laws saying that you're allowed to walk around with open beverage containers. You have
Okay.
Gainesville, Florida,
Of course, Florida.
the entire state of Indiana, Ohio. There's a town called Hood River, Ohio, which allows it. Butte, Montana has that you can't have open containers between 2 and 8 a.m. But otherwise, you're allowed to. So you have 18 hours a day where you can do it. They actually tried prohibiting it recently. There was an attempt to change the law, and it got voted down very, very easily because I guess people in Butte like to drink during their 18 hours that they can.
I've been to Butte. They do.
Yeah, but you can't have an open container when you're driving on the highway. That's a no-no.
Isn't that kind of everywhere? At least over here.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Oh,
And Ohio has what's known as DORAs, designated outdoor refreshment areas, which are places where you can go to drink. And Tampa, Florida allows you to have two drinks in plastic containers per person.
Well, they
But
do they
only
put
between 11 a.m. and 1 a.m.
did they define this like drink, like how big of a drink? I mean,
I don't know.
you have a gallon jug, is that one drink or?
I have no idea. And New Jersey allows public drinking in tourist spots, as in the beach and the boardwalk and things like that. And Michigan allows cities to grant their permits, if they deem that they want yeah, it's pretty interesting. And that's how this minute ends with Mr. Blue getting ready to explain to everybody what's going to be happening to them. Everyone's gonna have to wait until tomorrow to actually find out what will happen. So, is there anything else you wanted to say about this particular minute?
Since we're concluding on the subject of drinking, I wanted to talk a little bit about Louise Larrabee, who plays that drunk lady, billed as the alcoholic, and the character sleeps through almost the entire hijacking. And her career actually dates back to the 1930s, and most of her career was doing a lot of guest spots on TV shows, but she also had a small role in Failsafe. Where she plays Colonel Cassio's drunk mother. So she's once again playing an alcoholic.
She's good at playing drum.
She's good at playing drunks. And of course, Failsafe also featured Walter Matthau, and in both movies, neither of them share any scenes together. So I don't know if they swapped old war stories or not, but probably not.
Probably
But
not.
I thought
That
it was an
would be weird.
interesting little footnote to that scene.
Yeah, for sure. That's very interesting. All right, so every Thursday we have a game that is called the 70s Movie Trivia Potpourri. So I'm going to once again randomly spin the wheel and see what five questions Dave is going to get today about random questions about movies from the 70s.
Hope they're not about musicals.
Okay. What in the 1979 film The Frisco Kid, what were the occupations of the two main characters?
Gene Wilder was a rabbi, and Harrison Ford was, I want to say, a bandit, or was he? Yeah, I'm going to say he was an outlaw.
Okay, he was a train robber. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's close enough. For the thing. Yeah, I find that to be a really fun movie.
Yeah, it was okay. I saw it back in the day because I was really a big Gene Wilder fan because I loved Silver Streak and, you know, Blazing Saddles and those movies. And I think this was one of the first movies Harrison Ford did after Star Wars, wasn't
Yes.
it? And so, yeah, it was fun. I had to review
Yeah,
it
but it's fun.
a few years ago, and I hadn't seen it since then. And it's a congenial good time. Nothing memorable, but nothing terrible about it either.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, my favorite line in the movie is when Gene Wilder goes, "And then I came to Philadelphia, the city where all the brothers love each other." Okay, let's spin the wheel next for the next question. Okay, in the 1978 film Grease, what are the names of the male and female gangs, I guess you can call them?
Females were the pink ladies, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the males, Christ, the T-Birds, the
Yeah,
Thunderbirds.
very good. Excellent. It was the T-Birds. Very good.
I haven't seen that one in a long time.
All right, let's spin the wheel again. What 1970s movie is the only film from the 70s of three different movies of all time that won three acting Oscars?
That won three.
Yes, there are three movies in history that have won three
Yeah.
acting Oscars, and the only and one of them was from the 1970s.
Well, my first instinct is to choose The Godfather, but that doesn't sound right.
We're not talking about
I'm gonna say
nominations.
one.
We're not talking about nominations. We're talking about one.
Right, yeah. I'm gonna say One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
No, that only won two acting Oscars.
Oh. Three acting Oscars. All right. Kramer versus Kramer.
Nope, that also only won two.
This is killing me. I know I'm going to slap my head. My last guess, I'm going to say the French Connection.
No, the French Connection just won one.
I give up.
Okay, here, I'll give you a hint. It did not win Best Picture.
I did not win Best Picture. Network.
Very good. There you go. Yes,
I
it
still
won.
should have gotten that earlier.
All right, but the hint I was going to give you is that one of the actors won posthumously.
That would have sealed it, yeah.
Yeah, probably. But
Still should have got it earlier.
I didn't need that. All right, let's spin the wheel again and see what your next question will be. How many Oscar nominations did Rocky get, and how many did it win?
I'm going to say it got 10 and won 3.
Wow, that's right on the money. Excellent.
Wow.
Yes.
I
Okay, now
wasn't sure.
as a bonus, can you tell me which one?
Best picture, best screenplay, and I'm gonna best song.
No, the only well, sorry, the of you're talking about the wins, right?
Yeah.
So first of all, screenplay was Sylvester Stallone, and so he didn't win that one because
Okay.
he didn't win an Oscar. So it won Best Picture, it won Best Director, and it won Best Editing.
Best editing. Okay.
Yeah, and it missed Best Song, Best Sound, Best Screenplay written directly for the screen. It lost the Best Supporting Actor. For both Burt Young and Burgess Meredith. It lost Best Actress for Talia Shire, and it lost the Best Actor for Stallone.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think it should have won Best Picture personally. I mean, I liked the movie, but
Yeah,
I think they were better.
I think Network was better.
Network was better. All the President's Men was better.
And Stallone became the third person to ever be nominated for both an acting and writing award in the same year. The other two people were Charlie Chaplin for The Great Dictator and Orson Welles for Citizen Kane. So, I mean, that's pretty amazing that Sylvester Stallone is up there with those two guys,
Yeah,
too.
it is. Almost humorous.
Yes. All right, so let's do the final one, the final question for you today, in this movie trivia. Let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Okay, in the movie Heaven Can Wait from 1978, what sports team does Joe Pendleton play for?
The Rams,
Yes.
Los Angeles Rams.
Very good. Excellent. Nicely done. All right, Tate, 5 for 5. You're pretty good with that one. So we will now play the daily game of Name That Remake. So
Okay.
let's see what remake you get this time that you can possibly try and guess just by the ears once again. Who knows? Right, let us spin the wheel and see what we got. And around the wheel goes. The original came out in 1991, and the remake came out in 2015. And it's about an FBI agent sent undercover to try and stop a group of bandits.
Oh, that would be Point Break.
Yes, it would nicely done.
Thanks.
All right. So, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
You can find me at freekittensmovieguide.com, where we keep physical media alive through reviews.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Dave, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to finish this off?
Oh, have to. Have to. Gotta, can't stop at 49.
Okay, very good. All right, so until tomorrow, at you.
Gesundheit.